Listen.
You ready for Pepperwood? Yeah. It's just, we're going to just start right in with this one poem called Pepperwood, which is a two-voice poem. Can you see how the tree? Can you see the tree?
The pomo man is praying.
Great joy, the tree is expanding with great joy.
The pomo man is praying too.
A golden joy is bursting and spreading from the heart of the tree.
We offer coins and tobacco, soft dirt, coins and tobacco.
There is a leaping, you would not think a rooted one.
The pomo man is singing to the tree.
The tree is leaping, golden joy.
Sounds of deep singing, prayer, the pomo man.
The joy of the tree expands and holds us in a cloud of gold light.
The singing of the pomo man, the singing.
The tree is so happy after its long silence.
The singing, the pomo, singing.
Its leaves and branches wave with love.
The pomo man takes some small branches.
The happy, giving tree.
With his small knife.
A ripple of medicine giving.
The pomo man gathering medicine.
The tree widens harmony into the world.
The pomo man thanking, thanking.
The tree thanking, thanking.
And holding us.
We're going to play with some things tonight with listening, and that's a sort of the theme. And one of the things Dan wanted to be sure to that I told you, or one of us told you, is if there are poems that need more than one hearing, feel free to ask us to read them again. This one is called Pomo Boy. I wrote it shortly after I started working with Armando and I'd gone to see some dancers in Santa Rosa. Pomo Boy. He is so small among the other dancers, his feather skirt shocking up and away the wind of his tiny feet. His motions are less complex than the fast dances. Sometimes a slow dance brings him to animal stealth. He convinces the rabbit spirit, here, now. He protects generations to come. I was walking down the bike path on a beautiful day when I got the idea of calling this talk Poem is Native, with the idea that we wanted to really look at doing poetry not from the inspiration of other poems, but from what we could hear out of the earth, out of the land around us. And a few days after that, I wrote a poem called Poem is Native. And Jim figures in this poem, actually. It's his experience that the poem opens with. His life opened by the 86th flood. My friend saw Shiak, the spirit of the Russian River. Shiak told stories, sweeping a scope of time unfelt by humans in our brevity. Shiak, a feathered man, keen eyes shining and unafraid. If you don't believe, consider that years later in China, my friend saw paintings in a temple depicting feathered men just like Shiak. What are those? The Taoist priest said, river spirits. Shiak has lived this river unimaginably longer than the Pomo. The Pomo unimaginably longer than we Euro newcomers can fathom in intimacy and lore. My newcomer friend had this talk with Shiak one dark flood night opened by danger. Now we're all in danger. Can we open this dark night into Pomo knowing and doing? Here's the thing, no more stealing. The Pomo lost so much of this land by murder and treachery and ignorance. Maybe I'd give back all we can without vanishing. Maybe I'd learn the wisdom brave Pomo have kept alive by struggle and hiding and love. Maybe I'd replace the curriculum in our schools with pomo touching of land and beings and spirit. Sometimes as I walk the path, the bohem trees whisper to me, the jays bob on their branches. I am ignorant, and their words rise in my heart like a hot knowledge, old as Shiok and new. The pomo may teach us if we change into open respect and wondering, but we can't be their burden. We can't turn to them for every knowing of this land's spirit and necessity and cure. When we accept their teaching how to offer and give back, how to hear in equal relationship, oak and salmon and dragonfly, hummingbird and blackberry and sedge, heron and flicker and bear, then we must listen. Then we must invite Weya, the spirit guiding all beings. In our houses, too, Weya will sit down to breakfast and give instruction for the day. And when we join the pomo to give this land back to health and receive again our health from this rich and conscious land, where we learn to be native, we will have something to say. We will have something to give. We will no longer be a scourge and a burden. We will be brothers and sisters. The blink of Shiok's eye, that is our history, will be one history, and now a good story. And now Dan has something for us.
Oh, okay. My wife would tell you that when she first met me, I said, I'll probably grow up to either be a lawyer or a poet. I wound up being a kindergarten teacher instead, so you're going to have to bear with the fact that I can't leave my kindergarten life behind me after 30 years of it. But she became the lawyer, and I guess if you believe that, I guess I'm a poet now. Poetry, if it was ever in me, or if it's in me now even, lay dormant until about 17 months ago when I came here to Many Rivers to a poetry reading given by Jim Wilson here, who offered a way of approaching poetry that opened the door for me. Free verse is just too much like scaling a sheer cliff. There was not enough support, handholds for me. And he offers in his blog and teachings about poetry many different forms that can offer a way in for somebody of more modest ability. And he developed one called 100 Friends, which is, I think, a 14-line form. And I added 4 lines to make it an 18-line poem and 8 syllables. And using a form I developed just for myself so I could kind of have something to fill up, then I wrote this poem. But it's very much on the theme that she's talking about of getting to know the natural world that we live in that's real, instead of the artificial cultural world that we think is real and pay so much more attention to. It's called Not on Television, January 9th, 2009. So this is the first poem, really, that I came through me. I found Venus shining plainly in the day blue sky between the sun and the moon this afternoon. For 57 years, I've not known the sun and the moon have companies up there overhead in the daytime sky. No person showed me when or where to look. I learned how on the internet, glad to find something significant there. It felt like discovering a parent's affair, knowledge ancients kept and shared, air television screened out heaven.
This one to me flows naturally from that one. It's called There Is. There is a strange space with no external light. When a thing is visible, its own light shines. Maybe green, maybe no color, maybe B flat. There is silence, silence, or a subvocal murmur whose barely discernible words are wise. Often there is wind. Its smells are eloquent. Both heat and cold are soft. What I like best is no distance. The farthest thing is right here. And this one I wasn't planning to read tonight because it's not quite totally cleaned up. But because Armando is here, I thought I would just slip it in on here. I wrote it not long after I met him and I had gone to that same dance performance that led to the poem about the boy. It's called Guide. I scan the line of feathered dancers looking for your face, seen only once. Hard to pick you out from this folding chair perch. You are not there. You've gone somewhere in the spirit world. Spirit flings your turkey feather skirt, moves your rhythms across rough concrete as though a soft dust of centuries. Do you know I already love you, your brown arm movements graceful, strong, through my heart, my fingertips touching paint? Tears you do not see wash down the inside of my eyes when you speak, so grateful for your words pointing to pepperwood leaves that come strong scented into my clothes and rooms. You are my brother, bear and dear, circle us in blessing. And now Dan is going to teach us about the ethery.
Which I learned from Jim. It's a small world. Jim keeps a blog called Shaping Words, and I found it well worth visiting. Among the things he featured on there was a form of poetry I'd never heard of. It's 10 lines. It's a very simple form. 10 lines, and the first line has one syllable, the second line has 2 syllables, the third line has 3 syllables, and so on until the final 10th line having 10 syllables. But I'll try that out. And it, so with that sort of there, sort of a poem to try to fill up, a day or two later, my wife and I were talking about the possibility of getting something we've never had in our house, which is a TV. We don't have a TV in our house, so I do have a computer, so to watch a movie is a process. I have to lift the computer off the desk and carry it to the living room and turn it on that way and carry it back afterwards. So we don't see that many movies. And I think the prospect after having lived this many years without a television set is somewhat, it's just a conversational topic that doesn't go easily. we were on a drive up to take a hike, and we just had this conversation about how we would furnish the room to accommodate the TV set, and the conversation just kept on degenerating, getting more and more grumpy the whole way up, And by the time we got to the parking lot, we were barely talking to each other. And then we took a hike, and we were walking. We took a nice little loop hike, and it was very much through forest. And I just noticed the mood getting better and better and better. And I realized that it wasn't by accident. This healing that was taking place wasn't ordinary. It was coming from the trees. It was a real strong sense that the tree spirits were bringing us back to our senses and to reality and to harmony with one another. So that with that realization, I took a picture of the path we were walking in, and when I got home, I realized that I needed to write an effigy about it. So this is the effigy. And we're going to try an experiment, which I'm going to read it to you, and then we're going to try an experiment, and it's perfect. I thought it would be about 12 people, and I think I got the right number. So.
The first of two experiments.
Yeah, it's going to be a sound experiment. So I'm going to read the effigy, and then we'll do the experiment. The effigy is called Ungrudging. Hike, foothills, March sunshine, afternoon breeze, something about trees, how they listened calmly to our grudging bitterness, listened, absorbed, and drank it down, grounded it root deep in the earth so we could hear the leaves sing, the hawks, the geese. So the experiment I would like to try is an effigy. Never been done before. It's a Many Rivers debut. My idea is to pass. Yes.
Excuse me. What is the word you're saying? How is it spelled?
Etheree, and it's named after the here.
This form of poetry was created by a Kansas poet by the name of Ethery Armstrong Taylor. I love that name. I've never encountered the name Ethery before, but that's her name, Ethery Armstrong Taylor. She died about 4 years ago or 6 years ago, something like that. And she invented this form, and I hadn't heard about it until recently, but it's simplicity itself. Just 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. And you got it. Everyone here will remember it.
Well, actually, because you're going to get a copy with directions. And actually, part of my intention that I shared with Sandy as I was invited by her to come here was, I really feel strongly that if I can do it, you guys can. Anybody can do it. You know, I mean, it's really a sense that, and it's really our responsibility, I think, as human beings to begin to open ourselves to art, to poetry, and to nature particularly. We need not to think we're not experts and you're not audience. We're all here in this together, and we better all do everything we can to open ourselves up to, especially, I think, what the natural world is trying to tell us. And poetry is one way, painting's another. Mm-hmm. And so that was the idea behind this effigy. What I'm asking you to do, I'm going to give everybody a copy of this poem. You can keep it, but what I want to do is I'll read it again, and then we'll pause for a moment, and then I would like people to spontaneously read one single line from the poem, but in random order, you know, and just something that, you know, as you hear what other people, what other voices are saying, you know, you read your line, and it'll try not to jump on top of each other. But hear the poem all mixed up, all jumbled up by this group live in sort of a cloud of phrases. And I should have probably a bell. We'll do that for maybe 2 minutes or maybe a minute, and then we'll read the poem again as I assemble it. Because too much, I think the process for me of writing a poem is you have all these, you know, jumble of words and images and thoughts, and somehow you've got to bring them down onto paper. And so our cloud of sound will be much like the what was going on in my brain before I got it on paper. And thank you. So you have to take one and pass it. And they're yours to keep, and I encourage everybody to try an effigy or some other poem. When they feel moved.
Kind of like ether, you know, like you're grabbing it out of the ether.
Yeah.
I thought you were saying.
Yeah, ethery would be, I like that. Yeah.
It might be pronounced that way, I actually don't know.
I like the
thanks for the large writing.
You're welcome. You can tell I have old eyes. Huh?
That's where to see things.
So I'll read it, and then I'll invite you to join in the cloud of song. Hike, foothills, March sunshine, afternoon breeze, something about trees, how they listened calmly to our grudging bitterness, listened, absorbed, and drank it down, grounded it root deep in the earth so we could hear the leaves sing, the hawks, the geese.
How they listened calmly.
And not their breeze.
Something about trees.
To our grudging bitterness.
Foothills.
Hike. March sunshine. Grounded it root deep in the earth. So. How they listened calmly.
And drank it down.
Afternoon breeze.
Listened. March sunshine.
Hikes.
Sing.
The hawks, the geese.
We could hear.
Afternoon rains. Something about truth.
Deep in the ears.
Like
how they listened calmly.
Grounded it root deep.
In the earth, so.
Absorbed.
Drank it down.
You could hear the leaves sing. The geese, the trees. Calmly.
Something about trees.
Sunshine.
The hawks.
The geese.
Pike.
You know, I was going to read it the way I wrote it, but I love that. That was great. I don't think I want to spoil that mood. No. I have to say, my experience of hearing you guys read it was so much like what was there in my head before it came down on paper. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm sorry
I have to leave. Well,
thank you. My son, but I'm glad I got to be here for part of the evening.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming.
Dan, excuse me,
yes.
Could you read your first poem again?
Oh, sure. Okay. We love to be asked to be our poems now. Just so you know. Not on television. Oh, maybe, do you want a little explanation at all? Let me just say, the way I first got interested in it in the first place was, I was with, our daughter was visiting us, and Venus was shining very brightly in the evening sky. So brightly that I began to wonder if you could see it, you know, during the day, you know, at, you know, while the sun was up, and that's what prompted it. And then I, you know, but I had never seen it before. I'd always thought the only things you could see in the daytime sky would be the sun and the moon. And then I discovered all this time, you know, my whole life it was there. I mean, it's not there all the time, but when it is there, it's quite easy to find. You just need to know where to look for it. Mm-hmm. Anyway. Not on television. I found Venus shining plainly in the day blue sky between the sun and moon this afternoon. For 57 years, I'd not known the sun and the moon have company up there overhead in the daytime sky. No person showed me when or where to look. I learned how on the internet, glad to find something significant there. It felt like discovering a parent's affair, knowledge ancients kept and shared, air, television screened out heaven.
What's that last line again? Was it television screened?
Screened out heaven.
This is sort of about trying to screen it back in, maybe. This is called Even Before. Even before I met the Pomo man who sang the joy of the pepperwood tree, even before I was taught, one day I walked down the trail into the low valley where late-season blackberries hung round and dark. I walked carrying my quart buckets in a big basket. I walked with the hunger of winter waiting in my freezer. Even that day, I reached the arching ripe brambles with a gesture to give back, but my fingers in my pocket found no little doeskin bag of ground corn, left absently back at the house, and I had nothing to offer. I paused a long, painful moment, the law of reciprocity buzzing my foolish head. Would my quart bucket stay empty, or would I steal? Then, brushing my eyes over thorn curves, intertangled canes of yellowing leaves, a visible request, I found my offering. I stretched my hands, fingers fanned in blessing, the fertile miracle of blackberries, and I sang. I sang sounds that came of their own primitive syllables, thanking words, and raw sounds, sounds rising from timelessness through my mouth. I sang sounds of offering to the blackberries, praising them, an ancient rhythmic honoring, and was amazed because in a wide radius I could feel a tension rise sharply and glad. I could feel glad attention of blackberries and blackberries and blackberries and willows and bush tits and towhees, a bright relief and welcoming, many ears startled with gladness by this singing praise, singing thanks. I stumbled into old relationship of love long silent. Plants and animals along this creek starved and celebrating a return, heart beauty, and all of us within, all of us within. Hmm. Now, when I first read that poem to Dan, he liked it, except he complained that there wasn't any reference to anything kind of in the ground. Everything that I was mentioning was above the ground, and he wanted something in the ground. And that seemed like a really good idea, but when I went back and tried to fix that, I recalled my experience, and it wasn't part of my experience, so I couldn't do it. So, I wrote a poem for Dan, and it's a double ethery.
Oh, my.
And a double ethery, after it goes from 1 to 10, then it goes from 10 back to 1. It's called Dirt. He wants earth, life below the surface where leaves shimmer greenly and birds flit through shadows. He wants worms mouthing darkness, millipedes racing with springtails through hidden dampness of pregnant soil, drama of decay and mycelium. The secret movement of nutrient breath, the slow leach of rain past roots and stones, gophers and moles twist through tunnels, round white grubs spiral beside Jerusalem crickets, and bacteria by the millions renew our living soil.
Thank you. That's wonderful. Wow. Again.
For Dan. Dirt. He wants earth, life below the surface where leaves shimmer greenly and birds flit through shadows. He wants worms mouthing darkness, millipedes racing with springtails through hidden dampness of pregnant soil, drama of decay and mycelium. The secret movement of nutrient breath, the slow leech of rain past roots and stones. Gophers and moles twist through tunnels, round white grubs spiral beside Jerusalem crickets, and bacteria by the millions renew our living soil.
Oh,
that's good.
I had to please him. You know, I feel bad that I couldn't use his suggestion.
Well, you did use it.
I did, yeah.
Even better, yeah.
I think so. Right in the dirt.
And, you know, food comes out of dirt. So I have a couple of food poems, because I think that part of being in tune with nature is listening to food as you eat it. I sort of met a spirit guide who recommended that at least one food and at least one meal every day, I should try to tune into what the life of that animal or plant was before it was food. And I don't always do that, but it is wonderful when I do. This first one is called Breakfast. I sit down to eat in the green and golden mid-morning. Noise arises from somewhere down the street, dull and continuous compressor, tightening my stomach even as the blessing of food descends. I wonder what breakfast was like when there was no engine noise within 500 years. Did our food laugh over our tongues, reveal stories to our inner eye? Strawberries singing in our mouths, the happiness of sun come warm again. Acorn mush teaching how to sink roots deep and solid and become big. Pine nuts telling green breezy tales of beetles making small tracks over resinous bark. Deer meat whispering fleetness and grace, unwavering watchfulness, the giving and taking woods. Cells of our bodies struggle to hear as we chew out of rhythm. All food is eloquent. The silence of nourishment begs to speak.
Wonderful.
And this is called Old Friends. One evening, Teepee Dan and I sat together eating organic asparagus. So delicious, it stopped our talk. I closed my eyes to savor the primitive morsels. I saw dark end of a field bordered by slow water and horsetails. I saw vigorous asparagus growing near horsetails. I felt deep happiness of asparagus and horsetails lush in cool spring sun. Old friends, earthy and green and glad of each other. I opened my eyes. Teepee Dan asked, "What did you see?" "Horsetails." "I saw them too," he said. An old, old love song echoed in our bodies as we filled our mouths again. That's true. I didn't make that up.
Can we get the food poem again, the one just before that?
The breakfast one?
Sure.
I sit down to eat in the green and golden mid-morning. Noise arises from somewhere down the street, dull and continuous compressor tightening my stomach, even as the blessing of food descends. I wonder what breakfast was like when there was no engine noise within 500 years. Did our food laugh over our tongues, reveal stories to our inner eye? Strawberries singing in our mouths, the happiness of sun come warm again. Acorn mush teaching how to sink roots deep and solid and become big. Pine nuts telling green breezy tales of beetles making small tracks over resinous bark. Deer meat whispering fleetness and grace, unwavering watchfulness, the giving and taking woods. Cells of our bodies struggle to hear as we chew out of rhythm. All food is eloquent. The silence of nourishment begs to speak. Mm. And now we come to experiment number two. This is a little poem called Law of Nature, and it has two parts that seem to contradict each other, and the trick is to read them so they don't contradict each other. And I'll read it for once. They are not here for us. We are here for them. They are here for us. We are here for them. And we're going to do the same sort of thing, except just randomly read them so we hear it in different voices. So just when you feel moved, read the whole thing and try to get those parts both true.
So you want, when a person reads, to read the whole, all
the
words?
The whole thing, yeah. Okay. With that different emphasis. You can start, Dan.
Okay.
I can be a kindergarten teacher too.
Do you want us to read the title as well?
No.
No, okay. They are not here for us. We are here for them. They are here for us. We are here for them.
We are here for them.
The whole thing.
Oh. The whole thing?
The whole thing.
Strict teacher.
German.
I think I'm getting what we're going to do. Okay. They are not here for us. We are here for them. They are here for us. We are here for them.
They are not here for us. We are here for them. They are here for us. We are here for them.
They are not here for us. We are here for them.
They are here for us. We are here. They are not here for us. We are here for them. They are here for us. We are here for them.
They are not here for us. We are here for them. They are not here. They are here for us, and we are here for them.
They are not here for us. We are here for them. They are here for us. We are here for them.
They are not here for us. We are here for them. They are here for us. We are here for them. I'm going to read one. I really appreciate hearing things in different voices. It's very, I don't know, satisfying somehow. Thank you. Owls. One evening, grasses shimmered tawny and fragrant. A barn owl wrote her pale poem, almost too swift to read, dropping and rising again through the twilight stain. Then pivoting on her long wings, she swept past to join her mate, the two tandem notes, hunting desire and demise. Wind such gravity of grace astounds. We may linger along a seam, peering into their owl world, or we may merge their predator's attention to rodent detail, flying our muffle-feathered, light-bone trajectory through a darkening substance, no longer empty air. And we come to you, Dan.
Oh, back to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was at a meeting yesterday in the sixth grade classroom, and there was a bulletin board up on the wall, and it said poetry. But they weren't poems, they were all cinquains, which I didn't point out to them. Cinquains are a form of poetry that was developed by an American poet named Adelaide Crapsey, who's an American poet who had become aware of Japanese haiku and tanka, which are syllable counting poetry, and she thought she would adapt it to English by creating her own form that is a little bit longer than a haiku. It's two, four, six, eight, and then a final two for a total of, what's that, 22 syllables. 22 syllables. So it's a really nice form, because it's kind of quick and easy, so it can be written by, you know, children in school, but also it's very pleasing for the shorter idea poem. So this one's called Trees Speak, and I just had another similar experience to the one that Ethery was about. Goes, trees speak to those whose hearts are still enough to hear subsonic music, laconic and clear. And for those of you, a laconic means said in very few words, and as few words as possible. Trees speak to those whose hearts are still enough to hear subsonic music, laconic and clear. I'll do another one too.
Yeah, you can do another one.
Here's one more cinquain. This one came to me on a hike. It was a hike just so beautiful. I thought it was up on Red Hill, if you know where that is, up on the Sonoma mm-hmm. coast, overlooking the hills just south of where the Russian River lets out into the ocean. And I literally had this feeling like I had left this plane and was walking in some heavenly realm. Mm-hmm. It was with Sarah, and it was just like this absolute sense of having left my ordinary life, and I was gone. So anyway, this is it. It's called Grace. So kind, our Mother Earth, holding us in such grace, we think her patience will never run out. Grace, so kind, our Mother Earth, holding us in such grace, we think her patience will never run out.
Before I read the next couple of poems, I want to just give a little bit of background. I've been mainly a painter for pretty much all my life, and since I was in college, I've had this commitment to paint, to heal the environment, to heal, you know, the rift between people and the rest of creation or whatever. And over time, I began to realize that this new paradigm that I wanted my work to push us toward, we didn't need a new paradigm. You know, the Indians have always had the right paradigm, and we just have to let it come back into some power. So I've been heading in that direction more and more, and I've been doing work that has more and more to do with that. And sometimes it comes up with characters that I don't even know who they are or where they're from, but it seems to be a story, a kind of illustrations of a story of how we get back to harmony. And it was the process of doing that kind of work that led to the paintings that started, you know, Armando saw, and then that's how we started working together. So, you know, part of what I'm doing with these poems is about listening to the land and the different creatures that live here. But part of it is about the historical and, you know, kind of political difficulties we've got to sort out. So the next two poems have a little bit more to do with that. The first one is called Basket. This is the one I would have read you on the phone if you weren't coming tonight. Basket. Say the Pomo had a beautiful basket full of the wisdom of 10,000 years. Say Spanish and Russian and American soldiers and settlers and scammers knocked the basket to pieces. Say terrified survivors scrambled and scurried, gathering up such pieces as they could, dodging murder and hiding in the hills. Say now we begin to notice, even broken and patched, that basket holds medicine. We all want cures. Say we listen hard to movements of ants in their tunnels, to wings of California sisters too few among oak leaves, to mutterings of quail picking through blackberries and poison oak, to rustlings of sedge along the lazy water. Say we listen to all they listen to. Say we can't find some of the pieces slashed from that basket when God was dying in the valley. Say we learn to help mend it. Say we weave the voice of oak and the adages of alder across the gaps. Say we stitch the grace of deer and the leaping of salmon along the coils. Say it means everything to us. The next one I'm going to have to show you. Well, here, this is Thunder Woman. Thunder Woman, I have a print of how she first showed up, I believe. She's here somewhere. I think I have her. She first showed up in a kind of scary way. She's not so scary, she's run off and hid. Here she is. So she first showed up like this, and I didn't know who she was or what she was about, but she wasn't the first character in this series that I didn't know who they were and what they were about, so it didn't bother me a whole lot. Anyway, this poem is about Thunder Woman. Thunder Woman. It's in four parts, so it's kind of a story almost. One, she came to my paper, lightning shocking from her head, a red and turquoise mask, blue skin, blue skin. She came sitting beside primordial water, gazing at the floating moon. She came sitting on a high, dry rock, steadied by the thin hands of Bird Grandmother. She came crossing a river, her hand held by Buffalo Dreamer. I loved her, listening hard without knowing who she is, until she came, standing in water among the Pomo's tulis, stretching her arms to a young crescent moon. Then I recognized Thunder Woman, the spirit of native uprising. Thunder Woman, the power of Indian seeing and loving the land, native knowing coming again to rule Turtle Island after long furtiveness and dispossession, coming back to protect all our relations. Two. My daughter urged me to see the movie Avatar. I waited for the DVD when small screen violence wouldn't artificially shatter my peace. As my daughter foretold, I rejoiced in the cinematic message of native right, inseparable kinship of life. Then a meaning exploded. This jolt brought to jaded audiences in blue skin, blue skin. Not coincidence, but a signal of hope from the presence of power. Life does take sides. We will all be native again. Gratitude will fall like spring rain everywhere. Three, I sit with a beautiful Pomo elder looking at Thunder Woman on a laptop. Her approval wraps around me like a rabbit skin cape. She murmurs. Maybe you're Thunder Woman coming to help us. A man I once loved said much the same thing, but it's not like that. Even if I turn into the hero I dreamed to be when I was small in the Massachusetts trees, Thunder Woman needs 10,000 heroes, all stepping into our best dreams and blue skin, blue skin, helping all our relations. The people who awoke to the longing of a Texas canyon where Comanche horses were murdered, who built the fellowship that bathed that place and that past with respect. They walk in Thunder Woman. There are languages to save and stories of real Indian Navis to show on the big screen and cure the jaded audience. Songs to sing and medicines to protect and the right to harvest them. 10,000 tasks for Thunder Woman heroes, servants of the people across the land, across the years. You too are her hands, her warm and fragile heart, her lightning. Four. Meanwhile, I paint her. I paint her with lightning and blue skin, blue skin. She wants to dance with Essie Parrish and the power of memory honored and understood. She wants to dance with a small Pomo boy and the power of the future protected and loved. She wants to dance in open fields, the broad sun gleaming on her big movements and the small folds and bends of grasses and flowers. She wants to stand in the ocean, stretching her hands to eternity, gulls laughing with innocence. She wants to drum with the woodpeckers and arch with the ferns. She wants to sing, to begin and end council meetings, sing to guide speaking and making. She wants to unbuild machines of destruction and weave blankets of gentleness. She wants to dance in public places. She wants to dance. How's our time?
It's 8:30.
Oh, yeah.
I'm pretty close.
Yeah, so shall we read Pepperwood again?
Yes.
Yes. We're going to finish the way we started.
Nice.
Do you want to sing the other side this time?
Sure.
Okay.
Pepperwood. Can you see how the tree... Can you see the tree?
The Pomo man is praying.
Great joy. The tree is expanding with great joy.
The Pomo man is praying too.
A golden joy is bursting and spreading from the heart of the tree.
We offer coins and tobacco, soft drift of coins and tobacco.
There is a leaping, you would not think a rooted one.
The Pomo man is singing to the tree.
The tree is leaping, golden joy.
Sounds of deep singing, prayer, the Pomo man.
The joy of the tree expands and holds us in a cloud of gold light.
The singing of the Pomo man, the singing.
The tree is so happy after its long silence.
The singing, the Pomo singing.
Its leaves and branches wave with love.
The Pomo man takes some small branches.
The happy, giving tree.
With his small knife.
A ripple of medicine giving.
The Pomo man gathering medicine.
The tree widens harmony into the world.
The Pomo man thanking, thanking.
The tree thanking, thanking.
And holding us. You want to sing again?
I'll sing another song.
You want to turn this off, so?
I'm going to grab my... The instrument that I use is called, in our language, it's called a buffa buffa. And